Technology.ie, episode 52.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
Brought to you by Black Knight, it's the Technology.ie podcast, episode 52 for December 20th, 2012, with Michaela Nealon and Conor Muinichon. Hello and welcome to Technology.ie. This is Conor Muinichon in the Edgecast Media Studio. And in Carlow, County Carlow, it's Black Knight CEO Michaela Nealon. Hi, Michaela.
Hiya, Con.
We're still here.
Well, it's not, we never went anywhere. We took a little break.
You went on your holidays. We were on a break, as Ross said famously in Friends years ago. There's an ancient TV reference.
Look, never mind. Well, this is a technology thing, not a let's walk down Con's aging memory lane.
So I was sick and you were on holidays and we kind of overlapped a little bit in between. My voice still not
100%. I wasn't on holidays. I was working, damn it.
It was work, was it? Go on, tell us. What were you doing?
I was over in New York for meetings, and then I was in DC for meetings.
Okay.
At a couple of meetings. I mean, I did have a couple of days break as well, but it wasn't like because I was off, you know, sunning myself on a beach or anything.
It's not like you aren't entitled to it, Michaela. We don't grudge it to you one little bit. But you had an unfortunate situation with your bags.
My bag. I checked my bag in Dublin early Tuesday morning. I didn't see the damn thing again until Sunday morning.
Oh, dear God. Just before you came back, in fact.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, dear God.
I mean, I'm laughing about it at this stage, but it was like the ongoing saga of where the hell is my bloody bag? Let's not go there. Spending 2 or 3 days in New York with basically the clothes I travelled in wasn't something I'd been planning on.
Mm. Oh, dear. Oh, well. Well, you're welcome back anyway, Michaela, and it's good that we're able to do this one day before the Mayan apocalypse.
This means that if you don't publish the podcast really quickly, Con, it may never get published.
It may not ever matter, in fact. So we'll do our best to get that out bright and early tomorrow. Of course, it's the edition for December 20th, and then it's Friday, December 21st. And hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll relax and enjoy ourselves for Christmas. We'll be talking later on about Black Knight's plans for Christmas, about special offers and some special offers from your customers and suppliers and things like that as well. We'll be talking about Instagram. We'll be talking about Apple. We'll be talking about Google on the programme this week. We're going to talk, I just snuck it in there at the end, Michaela. We're going to talk about the EU 2013 government website and a couple of other things as well we want to talk about. But first of all, you've got a new toy, I hear.
Yes, I have a new shiny object. I bought myself an iPad mini.
Mm, nice. Very good. You were showing it to me there just a while ago on the webcam. And it's not your first iPad, no?
No, I had a first generation iPad, you know, just Wi-Fi only, which I actually won in a kind of a draw or something. And I didn't have any reason to upgrade because, you know, it was working. It was grand, you know. It didn't have all the funky features that the newer ones had. But, you know, if it ain't broke, why fix it? But when the iPad mini came out, I was very interested. I got to see a few of them over the last month or so in, you know, various Apple stores and everything else. But none of them had it in stock. Mm. I was over in the States and I thought, no, I'll just get it. So I got it when I got off the train in D.C., walked into a shop. They had them in stock. That was it. Done. Sold.
Happy?
Delighted. Love it.
Usually we say bigger is better, bigger screen, you know, greater resolution and all of this. But with the iPad mini, it seems to be a more useful compact size.
Well, this is it. I mean, the thing about the iPad mini is it's small enough. It's a bit bigger. Actually, looking at it compared to a book, do I have any books sitting around here?
Mm.
Of course, typical, it's about the only part of the house where it doesn't have loads of books. It's about the same size as a bit larger than a paperback.
Right.
In terms of the actual physical size. So it's the kind of size, if you have a large jacket pocket, you can slip it into it. If it's small enough, you can easily pop it into a laptop bag with your laptop or anything else. It'll fit into pretty much anything. You can balance it on various things. You can sit. it can, you know, it's small enough. Like I took it down to the restaurant in the hotel where I was staying the last few days, and I was able to read about stuff and things and do emails and everything else on this device. It just doesn't take up much space. It's small, it's compact, you can hold in one hand. Obviously, because it's an iPad, it has all the same apps as you get on the iPad or on the iPhone, for that matter. It's got two cameras. The model I got also will take a SIM card. I'm not going to bother getting one at the moment. But, I mean, it's a lovely device. And it's just nice. It's a nice size. I love it.
The Kindle comes to mind to me when I look at it, and when I saw you just demonstrating it there a few minutes ago to me, and the same kind of advantage, I suppose, of that kind of not quite your big tablet, but something that's manageable and that's handy and that's useful, and I can imagine we're going to see you using that quite a bit. We'll ask you, see how you get on with it over Christmas anyway, Michaela, but glad to hear you're enjoying this. And also, you enjoyed a trip to the movies recently. Now, I'm jealous of this because this is definitely on my plans, on my agenda. I'm going to bring the kids to The Hobbit. Do you think they'll stay awake through the entire thing?
That's actually a very good question. It's a very long film.
You know what? You were just talking about needing a toilet break. When I say stay awake, that's not the issue with say, 7 and 8 year olds that we have in our house. But definitely, they're going to get hungry.
Yeah, I mean, it's a long film. I mean, to be perfectly honest, I mean, that was the thing. I mean, about halfway through it, you could see people starting to leave the cinema, rushing out to the bathroom and rushing back in again. And as soon as the film finished, there was obviously a mad dash to the bathroom. I mean, I've never actually had to queue in a cinema toilet before, but that happened to me. It's absolutely, visually it's stunning. And the thing, you know, what's relevant for us is because, unlike with a lot of other films, while it was released not only in 3D, also in IMAX, but in this IMAX high frame rate format.
48 frames per second, which is twice the normal frame rate. And directors like Peter Jackson and what's the other guy? The guy that does the... forget his name. The guy that went down to the bottom of the ocean. What's his name again? I know directors like that. The guy that... James Cameron.
Cameron, Avatar. Yeah,
that's right. They've been talking about this high frame rate, that it's the new standard, that they want to see movies made in it. Interestingly, now I'm going to ask you about the story and the fact that, you know, a book that that is in fact smaller than The Lord of the Rings has been turned into, in fact, three separate movies, each in mammoth of mammoth length. I'll talk to you about the story and all that in a moment. But I've read some reviews. Reviews have been kind of mixed on The Hobbit. Reviews on the technical side of it and on the high frame rate and all of that have been kind of mixed, and one reviewer in particular I've seen has been pointing out that this high frame rate and gives you a situation where it's all too real, it's all very, very vivid, and so vivid in fact that you can see the special effects, you can see the lines, you can see the joins, and rubbish, you say?
Rubbish. I read the same
review.
The same reviews. Yeah. I read several reviews saying, oh, it's far too real, it's far too realistic. It's like, oh, what did they say? Something about comparing it to soap operas. I don't know. I mean, all sorts of stupid things. No, the reality is this. It is a fantastically visual film. It looks absolutely amazing. It is incredibly vivid. The colors are vivid. The scenery, the costumes, the props, everything is incredibly lifelike, realistic. It's very immersive. I mean, sure, if you're one of those weirdos who goes to the cinema just to pick something apart, you might be able to find something to pick apart, but you could do that with any film anyway. No, I think, you know, going to see it in the high frame rate, definitely worth it.
And the story?
This was something, again, I had the same problem that a lot of people had. I mean, how on earth do you manage to take a slim little novel? I mean, it's not a... I mean, say that it's shorter than The Lord of the Rings is an understatement. The Lord of the Rings is three large-ish books.
Yeah.
The Hobbit is a single little paperback. I mean, it's a wee slip of a book. I mean, it's not even a blockbuster, the bestseller blockbusters you pick up in the airport. I mean, it's a small book. So how on earth do you manage to spring that out into 3 hours? How do you manage to string that out into three separate films, each of about 3 hours apiece? I was wondering about that. I was thinking, what on earth's going to happen? I mean, if you've seen some of the, I think it was The Onion or one of those places was doing some skits on that, kind of crazy things about, The Hobbit taking 2 or 3 hours to, choose which shoes to wear or something equally insane. The reality is it works. The length of the film, it's because, this some of the backstory that's kind of mentioned in passing in the novel, you actually have, proper sections of it devoted to that. No, it works. I mean, you've got the entire thing with, the meeting the Hobbit, the dwarves come along, and they start off on the adventure together. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but I think it's worth going to see. If you're a Lord of the Rings fan, you'll love it or hate it.
I've got to admit to getting a bit tired of Lord of the Rings by the time the final of the three films in the trilogy. I won't say I like fantasy as much as the next guy, but I'd be interested to see. It's been a while now. How long has it been since the trilogy? It's been quite a number of years, hasn't it?
You would ask me a question like,
sorry about that. No, Mikhail, it's got to be.
Let me just double check.
It's got to be at least 7 or 8 years, if I recall.
Okay, Lord of the Rings film series. Let's see. 2001 was the first one, so it's 2001, 2002, 2003.
Yeah, in fact, it's almost 10 years.
In
fact, since that. But no, we'll definitely go along. And as I say, I have kids who are into all kinds of movies, and this will definitely keep them going for a while, without a doubt. Let's move on, Michaela. There was drama of another kind at the United Nations recently. Now, we talked about this, Michaela, before in previous episodes, the suggestions that the International Telecommunications Union, which is a branch of the United Nations, was going to bid to take over certain elements of the internet. Opposition to this was pretty strong, not so much from governments, but as it turned out, it was from governments in the end, but also from companies, and companies such as Google organising opposition on a considerable scale. What happened?
It's interesting. I mean, it's one of these ones which, the meeting, unlike a lot of these things where, you have a conference that lasts a day, 2 days, 3 days, maybe a week. WICKET ITU was 2 weeks. I mean, it was a full 2 weeks. And the timetables that they were working under were, well, for lack of a better word, insane. I mean, some of the sessions were going on until like 1 o'clock in the morning local time. I mean, that's just nuts. But that's the way it works, and that's what happened. From what I've been able to gather, the certain countries were very interested in ITU expanding its control, in inverted commas, to cover the internet, and this is where Google and everybody else got upset, and a lot of users got upset about that. And in the end, the new treaty was only signed by a minority of countries. So in many respects, some people are calling it a failure. But it's not over yet. I mean, it's one of these things that's going to drag on for quite some time. The US and the EU en bloc said no. No, thank you.
And the no really seems to have been really based on a repudiation, as it's put here, of I'm reading a report here in CNET by Declan McCulloch here, of a proposal really that that repressive governments would take control of the internet and run it in a repressive, a restrictive, and a censored way.
Well, yeah, I mean that's the problem. I mean the reality is that a lot of the countries that had issues with with an open internet are more authoritarian. I mean, yeah. they're not they're not, you know, the democracies that we'd be we'd be familiar with. So, I mean, there's one of the I actually gave a link, which unfortunately was died since I gave it to you, and I'll post it again. Just I'll send that to you via IM. If it's like the ones support did not support it were basically full democracies or democracies that could be considered to be flawed in some respect. Ones that actually signed on to were mostly either authoritarian or hybrid regimes. I mean, that's it's worrying. I mean, you know, these are the kind of countries where, you know, freedom of speech, freedom of anything online is not something that these countries
support.
Would support, exactly. Yeah.
But, so, Michele, I mean, when you say it's worrying, I mean, is this... well, it's often the case with things like this. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's defeated and gone away. This will surface under another guise, is what you're saying.
Oh, God, yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's. I mean, this is the thing with when it comes to internet governance. I mean, it's something we've touched on many times over the last year or so. You know, there are certain governments that want to have more control over the internet. Mm. That's a reality. That is not going to change. I mean, all that we can hope for is that the other governments, and here you're going to hear me say something I don't often say, you know, like the United States, are going to keep singing from the same hymn sheet and saying no, no, no. You know, and it's one of these things where, you know, people talk about the US and some people don't really understand how the US views things like the internet. I mean, the reality is the US is very much into the kind of laissez-faire, let the market sort it out, let's not get heavy-handed.
Yeah.
And that is something that, you know, we need to have. And it's the only way that the internet can continue to function.
Well,
if we end up in a situation... Where we have a lot of top-down...
regulation, monitoring, control, filtering.
Yeah. It'll break.
Yeah. Well, it essentially won't be the internet as we know it. It won't be the engine of innovation and progress in business that we've enjoyed.
It's all out of business. That's
On the one hand, it won't be that. And it also won't be the engine of free speech and democracy, which, let's face it, it has been and is... It's I think, to the credit of how it's been managed up until now. It's interesting. I always ask you this, Michele, I know. Where is Ireland in this?
can we move on, please? Next question.
Was Ireland represented at this?
Officially, yes.
Yes.
Now, this is the official thing. Officially, Ireland has sent representatives there. According to the official list... The representatives were the from the Irish embassy or consular mission in Abu Dhabi. But nobody I know who was at the meeting has any recollection of them ever saying anything. Nobody has any recollection of speaking to them. So it's almost as if they weren't there.
Interesting.
I mean, I actually asked one attendee, an Irish attendee, how Ireland had voted, and that person was unable to tell me at that time.
And do we know now how Ireland voted?
Probably. I don't even know if they did vote.
Yeah. We'll look that up again. We haven't done our research on that, but we will look.
Well,
up
no, it's one of these things. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, you know, it really, really depresses me because they don't seem to understand that, let's see, did they vote? No, they didn't vote in favour of it anyway.
Okay. So we are with countries who would be, I think, more in line with our own views in many respects in terms of freedom.
Yeah, but the ones who didn't vote. Mm. Okay, let's go to the ones who did vote for it. Afghanistan, Algeria, Angola, Saudi Arabia, Argentina, Azerbaijan, Bahrain, Bangladesh, Barbados, Belize, Benin, Bhutan, Botswana, Brazil, Brunei. Do you notice a kind of recurring theme here?
I do, yeah. And you're skipping over countries such as Germany and...
No, they, didn't vote on it.
And exactly, that's what I'm saying. When you go over the list, the ones you've listed are the ones that did vote. And countries such as Canada, Croatia, United States, Spain, Greece, Israel, Georgia, Ireland in there as well, the United Kingdom, did not vote on this treaty. So essentially, after 2 weeks of a world conference on international telecommunications, they may as well not have bothered is one way to look at it. They've certainly got an idea as to where countries stand. It's predictable, I suppose, where they've ended up standing on this as well. But it's essentially... So is this treaty dead, or is it...
I don't really... Yeah. This is the thing I'm not 100% clear on, because... Yeah.
You see, in a way, we are, you know, there already are talks about two-tier, two-speed internets, if you like, countries such as China and Iran building their own internal networks, making sure that they're filtering and blocking access to content that they do not approve of or do not want their citizens to be engaged with. And so, in a way... It's no surprise, really. The concern would be if those kind of rules and that kind of thinking was applied across the board in the internet, and that would certainly be a concern for us here in Ireland. It's all very well to say that we enjoy the open and free internet and the benefits and the considerable business benefits that it's brought to us here in this country, but as you've no doubt pointed out many times, Michele, we need to make sure that we're heard on that point as well.
I mean, it's one of these things. It's like, look, if it was all taken away from us in the morning,
yeah, we'd be sorry.
We'd notice and we'd be sorry.
Absolutely.
But the problem is, if you sit back, I mean, you can liken it to a lot of things. I mean, I could make some horrible analogies, and I'll refrain from doing so now, because I mean, it's the silence thing that's a problem.
Let's move.
You can't just be silent. You need to make your voice heard.
Absolutely.
As a nation, not just as individuals.
Let's move on, Michele. You've pointed to a story or linked to a story this week in relation to Anonymous. They had one of their Twitter accounts suspended this week.
That was actually earlier today.
Okay.
This is the thing. Twitter has been suspending accounts from time to time. And, you know, the argument they use is that you may not publish or post other people's private and confidential information. Mm. So the account, one of the main Anonymous accounts, was suspended, but then it was unsuspended.
Why was it unsuspended? Was that clarified? No.
It's for posting an individual's private information.
Right. And this was related to the latest target of Anonymous is the Westboro Baptist Church, who are shocking in terms of their extraordinary belief and their really quite provocative and upsetting campaigning that they do at funerals of military personnel, for example, in the United States, declaring that tragedies such as, in this case, the Connecticut shootings, they're saying are God's judgment, in their view, on the wicked ways of the United States. And it's an appalling thing that's been done. They're mostly protected by, I suppose, the principle and the rights to free speech in the United States. But Anonymous has decided they've had enough of them, and they've targeted them, and they've posted details of members of the Westboro Baptist Church. As far as I know, they've published them in the last few days, and it's suspected that this is part of the reason why Twitter would have suspended that particular account. That some of these details may have been linked from a tweet.
Possibly. I mean, this is you know, they've Anonymous did post a screenshot of the reply from Twitter as to what had happened. Mm. It's hard to actually make out what the hell it is, because all the links are dead.
Okay.
But anyway, you know, it's interesting that they're you know, they're doing this thing. They're suspending accounts and they're putting them back up again. And it's, you know, it would have been a much bigger story if they'd kept the account suspended, because that might have unleashed the wrath of Anonymous on Twitter, which is possibly a reason why they unsuspended it again. I don't know.
It'll no doubt more will emerge in the next day or two in relation to this. This really first became an issue, didn't it, during the Olympics when a journalist posted email details of someone associated with a TV network in the United States and suggested that people make their views known to that individual in relation to the way that the Olympic ceremonies were being broadcast in that era, if I remember correctly. But we'll move on from that, Michele. Now, Instagram have created a kind of a storm in a teacup. Well, they've created quite a storm over the last few days, Michele. They brought out new terms and conditions, and people, there was a bit of something of an uproar in relation to those.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's one of these things. I mean, I saw a tweet from somebody, a couple of days ago. Oh my God, what the hell? You know, kind of blah blah blah. And, you know, it was an article, it was a link to an article saying that Instagram had updated the terms of service, basically saying that they could sell people's photos. And that was the headline, you know, that Instagram can sell your photos. It then turns out that that wasn't exactly what Instagram had said.
What did they say, Michele? Because I've read their correction, I've read their clarifications on this, and you know, they've made it clear that you own your own content on Instagram. I'm not entirely sure what it was that caused this misinterpretation or confusion.
Well, the way it was worded, it's you know, the wording, they admit themselves that the wording wasn't 100%, wasn't that clear. The thing was that it's worded in such a way, I mean, basically this comes back to what we've talked about before. You know, if you're not paying for a product or service, you are the product or service. You know, so the thing is, Instagram is a free service. They have to make revenue. It, you know, using advertising would be a way to do it. They changed the term. They put forward changes. They changed the terms of service to say that they were going to do X, Y, and Z in terms of using people's content to sell advertising. But the way it was worded suggested that they were going to actually sell the people's photos as a source of revenue, which was one way of interpreting the wording, I suppose. What they actually meant was that they could use the images alongside adverts. But what makes it more interesting is that if you look into it more deeply, it turns out that some of these terms and conditions were in the Instagram terms and conditions before now anyway.
Yeah, that's often the case.
And the other thing, of course, is, you know, it comes back to this entire thing. Look, it's a free service. And of course, other people are jokingly saying, well, you know, if somebody could actually sell my photos, well, good luck with that. Because you know, the reality is people's photos on Instagram are absolute rubbish. I mean, if I pull up Instagram on my iPhone, let me just have a look here whilst I do that, just to see, is there anything, any way worthwhile being posted by anybody I'm connected to on Instagram? And I can tell you in advance now, there probably isn't. Mm-hmm. Let's see. A silly photograph of somebody's dog. A silly photograph of a bit of fruit. I've no idea what the hell that is. Photograph of a cake. Photograph of a logo. How exciting.
Fair enough, Michele. And so your point is, you know, nothing to report here, nothing to see here, move on. I got to say, I'm impressed by, I read Instagram's statement on the matter, brought out within hours, really, I think, of this this whole furore erupting, and really impressed with how it was written by Kevin Systrom, co-founder of Instagram. Really impressed with how simple and clear the language was, and I suppose, and the fact that they took ownership and responsibility for the fact that the language may have been confusing or misleading in the original terms and conditions that were published the previous day, but also, you know, the explanation and the clarification that they come out with reminds us and clarifies the fact that these terms and conditions weren't simply introduced, they were published 30 days in advance of taking effect, precisely with the purpose of giving people the opportunity to comment and criticise.
But it's, you know, it's one of these things. Like, I mean, my initial gut reaction when I saw things was, you know, what the hell? I mean, what the hell are they doing? I mean, I'm actually looking here. National Geographic actually has posted on Instagram
NatGeo is suspending new posts to Instagram. We are very concerned with the direction of the proposed new terms of service, and if they remain as presented, we may close our account. That's from the National Geographic. That was posted 4 hours ago.
Right. Okay, so it's still not gone away.
Not entirely, yeah. But, you know, part of the thing, I mean, Scoble posted something, I think it was yesterday, which I thought was very, very interesting in that, you know, he's saying was that, you know, Instagram has a quite a large user base. I mean, it's got a very large user base. If you have a network of contacts on Instagram, much as the way you might have on Facebook or on Twitter or, you know, any other established network, while, you know, you might not like some of these changes to service, are you really going to go off and be able to recreate that entire network on something else? Well, and the answer is no, you can't. I mean, you won't be able to. And that's the thing. I mean, sure, you should. I think people need to be more conscious of the terms of service for products and services they sign up for when they're free. But at the same time, you know, it's not as if you're going to suddenly, you know, delete your Instagram account unless you're just having a bit of a hissy fit. I know some people have.
Incidentally,
like, you know, Facebook changes their things in it and there's uproar for 24, 48 hours. But it's not as if anybody you know has actually deleted their account.
Incidentally, Michaela, there's been talk recently about Twitter introducing Instagram-style filters and things like that as well. So maybe people feel that there's some place they could jump to.
Well, it's not just them. There's kind of a war going on now at the moment between various photo sharing services. Like Flickr updated their mobile app in the last week or so and introduces not only filters but also on-device editing. I mean, not just kind of simple resizing, but you can actually do, you know, pretty comprehensive editing of images on your mobile device before you upload the images.
After years of neglect, Flickr gets an update.
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, I'm a big user of Flickr. I absolutely love it.
And will this encourage you to continue to use it, or had you felt that you were being drawn towards some other photo publishing and sharing services?
No, what I would do is I was sharing photos on Flickr not at the same time. It was more kind of slightly asynchronous.
Yeah.
Like I might go off somewhere and I take a load of photographs with my iPhone and with other cameras and things. And I might do is I might share the stuff I've taken on my mobile device immediately to Flickr, to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or via.me or Posterous or whatever, whilst out and about. But I mightn't have bothered cross-posting it all to Flickr. I would then do a sync up when I got back and post everything. Actually, I'm looking at the editing tools on the Twitter mobile client, and it's actually not bad. You've got 3x3, you've got nine different filters. You can preview the effect each filter has very, very easily. I have no idea how I okay it. You can edit the photos. You can move and resize and scale them. What else can you do? You can apply a couple of very basic effects. I mean, it's not bad. I mean, it's better than it was. There was nothing before. You just kind of, you know, here's a photo, upload it. So I think, you know, the Twitter mobile client is a pretty good option.
Something else I've heard them talking about in relation to Twitter in the last few days, Michaela, is, and I don't know if you've seen this, I know it's not fully rolled out yet, but they announced that you'll be able to download your entire Twitter history.
Yes, that's meant to have gone live today. Now, I don't actually know where the hell I'd go to.
What I've heard is that it's somewhere on your settings page. Now, I haven't been able to find it yet. It hasn't popped up and bitten me in the face just yet. But certainly something I might be interested to look out for. Not entirely sure how interesting it might be. I know I signed up for there was something I signed up for recently that that would show you what you had tweeted a year ago or what you had blogged a year ago. Interestingly enough, it's interesting enough, and it's nice to know that stuff is archived, I suppose, and that it can be surprising and disconcerting, though, as well, to sort of see exactly what you were at maybe 4 years ago or five. But there it is nonetheless. We'll be on the lookout for that. Let's move on, Michaela. We've got lots to talk about on the programme this week. And just before we get into talking about Black Knight offers and that for this week, you came across something quirky in relation to, oh, and I'm looking at it already, it's gorgeous. It really does take me back to the old Windows 3.0 days and Solitaire. And the particular peculiar design of the cards, and in particular the reverse side, the back of those cards.
Yeah, I mean that it's yeah. If you used Windows at some point,
yeah,
you probably come on, admit it, own up. You probably spent a little bit of time playing Solitaire.
Not only did I spend a little bit of time playing Solitaire, but I had back in the day, my first PC was a 486, Michele, and it had a clock speed of 33. If I recall, would it be 33 megahertz? Would it have been that slow? Yes, it was.
Probably, yeah, probably.
33 megahertz. But for some reason, there was a button on the front of it that allowed you to slow down the clock speed to 8 megahertz.
Why did you do that?
Well, I'll tell you why I would do this. The only use that I've discovered for this was when you'd finally be about to complete Windows 3.0 Solitaire. When you were finally going to complete that, and you know the way all the cards would then shoot off in all directions and bounce across the bottom of the screen for you, you know, and you know if you did that at normal clock speed, it was over in a couple of seconds. But if you just pushed the button to bring your clock speed down to eight megahertz, it was a lovely slow motion effect, and that was the only use I ever found for that. Why you would run your processor at eight megahertz? I had no idea, but this was of some interest from that point of view.
Well,
but
here's useless factoid.
Yes,
486 ran at between 16 and 100. The CPU clock rate was between 16 and 100.
I remember this. I maybe I'm wrong now in what it was. I know my default speed was 33, and for some reason I don't know why this was. This was a vanilla, a clone, an IBM clone as they were called at the time, made for me. In fact, I ordered it from a company in Galway, and they assembled it in front of my eyes. And
that was probably a 386 then.
No, definitely 486. It had 4 megabytes of RAM. And it was a big deal for me at the time. I was in my final year in college, and helped me get through my final year software project and all of that. That's something I'll go into some other day. But somebody's gone and made the cards, Michele. A deck of cards with this. For example, you could choose the design, couldn't you, on the back of these? And one of them was this sort of beach scene. Is that the one? Is that the one that they've gone and done?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. I mean, that it was totally iconic. You know, you immediately recognized it, and somebody went, okay, let's actually make these into actual real cards.
Leave a comment on
they did, so you could buy them. Unfortunately, they only made a small batch, and of course they sold out immediately.
I'd like a deck of these cards if they weren't too expensive now, I think, and I know some people I could give them to as presents now. Speaking of which, it reminds me of flying toasters. Do you remember those?
Oh God, yes.
I had flying toasters, the screensaver on it as well. Great fun.
If you were in, I think it was in UL, if you walk past some of the computer labs, I think that was like the default screensaver at one stage.
Yeah.
So you'd see like hundreds of screens with these bloody flying toasters.
You know what was cool about it? I mean, this was exciting times without a shadow of a doubt. But, you know, people are going to say flying toasters. I know people are listening to this in this modern RSS-equipped, tweeting.
Look, RSS is passé.
I know indeed, but, podcasting, tweeting, YouTube kind of an age. And here we are going on about Windows 3.0 Solitaire, about clock speeds and about flying toasters. And you know what? What the clincher is really, Michele, is when you realise that this was in fact pre-web. This was, in my case, I think it was 91, 92, you know, there was We're talking pre-web in terms, you know, from most people's point of view, certainly. And I was delighted with the PC at the time. Let's move on. Michele, tell us what you're doing in Black Knight this week and for Christmas.
Well, it's Christmas. So we use Christmas as being a perfectly good excuse to release a bunch of special offers. So if you head over to happychristmas.me, we're proud users of the .me domain.
Indeed.
We've got a number of offers, .eu for $4.99, .me for $5.99, .co for $11.99, .biz for $4.99, .it for $6.99, and .be for $4.99. And of course, you can also get a 20% discount on hosting, special coupon code XMAS12, all uppercase. Go to happychristmas.me for details.
And not just your own special offers, you've put up a site to highlight deals from your clients as well.
Yeah, this is something we've thought about. I mean, we in our newsletters on and off over the last couple of years, and, you know, on Twitter and on Facebook as well, we've been, you know, saying, hey, you know, tell us about what you're doing, tell us what your special offer is, or a special discount or promotion or whatever. And, you know, some of our clients would say, oh yeah, this is really cool, you know, we can do this, here's the special offer, if you put in your newsletter, that'd be fantastic. So thinking about this, I thought, well, why not set up a special site for Christmas so that people can push out their special promotions? So we set up christmascracker.biz.
fantastic. Christmascracker.biz.
I mean, you know, for non-Irish people, that's probably a bit of a weird concept. Can you explain where the Christmas cracker is, Colm? So I've had to explain this several times to Americans over the last week or so.
All right. British people know what a Christmas cracker, I think, is, Michele, but it's not an American concept at all, no?
No, they don't know what it is.
Okay, so if you are American and you're listening to technology.ie, a Christmas cracker, there's probably some other word for it. I'm sure they'd recognise one if they saw it.
We don't have it.
Oh, really? Okay. So it's this... I suppose, well, we'll post a picture of it, Michele. That's what we'll do. We'll post a picture of a Christmas cracker. I can't really think of how you would describe what a Christmas cracker is. It's actually, when you think about describing it, it's actually quite ridiculous, isn't it?
Oh, it's totally ridiculous. Anyway, there were a couple of other things. Moving on, beyond that.
So those are the Black Knight deals and the deals from your clients for this week. Deals from clients at christmascracker.biz and Black Knight deals at happychristmas.me. And you can check those out there and on technology.ie. What else do you want to talk about, Michele?
Life, the universe and everything else. No, seriously.
Pick something smaller.
Well, would you go back up the page, Colm?
Oh, I will, yeah. No, I wanted to sort of... we were spending so long talking about some things, I wanted to sort of...
Yeah, I know, well, okay.
Okay, so pick what you want to talk about.
Well, the other thing, the other big news...
I've missed you, Michele.
I can bingo, Colm.
What's that?
Well, it's not really I can bingo. Do you remember we were talking about this crazy-ass concept of...
digital archery?
Digital archery, that was it. Do you remember that crazy, crazy, crazy concept? You know, how do you decide which of the 1,917 new TLD applicants gets to go first?
Because you can't roll them all out first. Isn't that what they were saying?
Sorry?
Because they can't roll them all out at once, they feel.
No, they can't. I mean, that would be impossible.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to prioritize them, batch them, you know, work out some kind of pecking order so that this string goes before that string goes before this string in terms of, you know, the entire evaluation and everything else. So the original crazy idea was the digital archery, which we talked about, which was totally nuts. Mm. And they came up with another idea, which was, well, Stefan has written a post, which I've linked to there. I can bingo. I think actually that's a pretty good way of describing it. And it was a draw. It was like a lottery draw.
And they got Santa Claus involved.
Yeah, that was one of the applicants. one of the applicants has applied for Doc Christmas.
Okay.
And they're uncontended, which means that if they, unless I can and the evaluators or somebody else finds some huge issue with the application for Doc Christmas, then Uni Registry's Doc Christmas application will be delegated eventually.
Okay. So did they? Where was Doc Christmas successful in the first round? then?
Well, it's not a matter of being successful because nobody's unsuccessful. Yeah. It's a matter of what your draw, what your position in the draw is. So Christmas got drawn at 1,290.
Right.
Which means that they'd probably be looking at 2014.
Okay.
The first batch of them are all IDNs, otherwise internationalized domain names, the ones in the funny characters, the kind of weird squiggles and God knows what else. So you've got looking at stuff in non-Latin script, in other words, Chinese, Arabic, and any other one like that. So the first one went to a Chinese script application for .Catholic. The first Latin script application was Amazon's bid for .Play, but they're not the only ones applying. I mean, it's a bit more complicated than simply, hey, you know, you drew number one, so you're going to be the first one out the gates, because there's multiple applications for some of them. And as we've mentioned before, like .app has like, what, 13 applications. It was interesting. And this means now that, you know, companies and applicants will have a better idea of where they stand in terms of a timeline. So you can turn around to an investor and say, hey, you know, we got this number, we got drawn at, you know, number 250. So we're going to be going for evaluation in Q1 of 2013 or whatever. You know, they can actually talk about time frames a little bit more concretely.
So we could be seeing these quite soon. That article by Stefan van Gelder says that we could expect to see the first new GTLDs clearing the ICANN approval process by the end of the second quarter 2013.
Yeah, that's possible. Now, that doesn't mean that they're all going to that they're going to suddenly start going live by the second quarter of 2013. I mean, what that means is that, you know, Stefan's being, he's not being ridiculously optimistic. I mean, the guy's very pragmatic about these things, but I know the guy very well. You know, you could see a situation where, you know, Q3 or Q4 2013, we might actually see the first couple of these names going live. I mean, that would be fantastic. I mean, you actually say, right, let's go through, you know, these are going to start appearing. There's probably going to be teething issues. There's going to be stuff that's going to go terribly wrong. So, you know, we'll start working through that. And, you know, hopefully within the next 18 months or so, we might actually start using these new domains.
Should be interesting. Should be exciting. It seems kind of positive. I reviewing this with you over the last over the last year or so, Michele, it's been hard to avoid the feeling that there's been an element of chaos involved in it.
That brings me to the bit. Now, did you see New TLDs, the movie, Con?
No.
No.
Go on. Link, where is it?
Link, hold on. I'm pasting. Here, quick. Woo. New TLDs, the movie. Pinky. Do you remember we had Pinky on there a while back?
Pinky Brand.
We had Pinky on it.
Yeah.
Yes, Pinky from Domain Diction.
Yes.
He put out a short tongue-in-cheek trailer of New TLDs, the movie. That's just the opening credits.
Okay.
Quite loud.
Is there anything to listen to? You can run it there and we'll listen to it if you like.
Well, no, there's nothing to listen to. Okay. It's just music. but basically, it's one of those things, if you actually look at the visuals, they're very funny.
Okay.
You know, alone in the wilds of a process that doesn't seem to end. Family of applicants against the elements.
But it does look, and you know, in fairness, Michele, it is beginning to look like something is happening, and that these exciting new TLDs and the opportunities they provide are, you know, within our grasp, perhaps.
Well, hopefully. I mean, you know, it's something. I think a lot of people are very upbeat about it because you're now looking at something much more tangible, much more tangible. I mean, it's still not, you know, like saying, hey, .blog will be available for registration in, you know, June 2013 or even June 2014. You don't have that, you know, fixed
thing. I mean, it's, you know, it is, though, a lot more, I suppose, a certain degree of this kind of what the hell type stuff is no longer there.
No, it's, I mean, a good... It's a good thing.
Have a look at the movie, it's funny.
I will indeed, without a doubt. We'll post a link to it as well on technology.ie. WordPress have rolled out an update. All good?
Yeah, I haven't heard of any major issues with it. I mean, it's nice to see that, you know, they're doing updates. I mean, I'm not too happy with a couple of the changes they've made. But I mean, I suspect that if a lot of people feel the same way that I do, they'll probably tweak that again. But you know, they add new features, they improve certain things. But what's nice is it's got to the stage where it doesn't break stuff badly when, you know, when they roll out an update. You know, sometimes software updates can break things in so many new and interesting ways. It's quite depressing.
How are WordPress doing, Michele, in the overall content management system stakes? You know, is it gaining ground? Is it as I seem to feel that WordPress seems to have become the CMS of choice in many respects for all kinds of applications. Is that fair to say?
It's a hard one to say. I mean, it's incredibly popular. I don't know what the actual ranking would be in terms of usage. Mm. But I mean, there's other things. Like, I was in Weebly's offices in New York last week. I'm name dropping. No, a friend of mine runs the New York office. And, you know, he was actually able to give me a percentage of the number of websites that are on the Weebly platform.
Right.
And it was impressive. It was something like, you know, 2% of the internet is on Weebly. Maybe that's not an exact figure, but it doesn't matter. It's still quite significant. And there's other services out there, you know, these site builder services that, you know, it's on a freemium type model. So you'll end up like a subdomain of Weebly or Wix or I think it's another one, Webs or something like that. And there's a bunch of these. So, in you know, this they're, you know, the 2012 iteration of the GeoCities type thing. I mean, yeah. They're a hell of a lot more advanced. They look a lot better out of the box, you know, but, you know, it's that same kind of thing. It's aimed at, you know, getting something online. In terms of CMSs, what we see, you know, WordPress is incredibly popular. Joomla is very, very popular. Magento and a bunch of the other ones are very, very popular in their particular niches. But yeah, I mean, WordPress is probably one of the most popular ones out there.
It's one of the things that really brought it home to me recently. There is a government organization here in Ireland that I deal with regularly, and they would have revamped their website in the last number of years. To the extent that it is quite, I have to say this, quite a useful and quite a well-organized, well-presented, not bad-looking website. And it's run on WordPress. It's clearly run on WordPress because it shows up in some of the path. There are certain indications of the WordPress directory. It's probably, I don't know, it's would it be considered bad practice to reveal your CMS too obviously in your website design, Michele? Or does it matter? Yeah.
Let's have security through obscurity, Colin.
Probably not. Not a good idea. But as I say, other than that,
What I would say to you is this: yeah. Colin, if using things that people should be aware of are things like, you know, using defaults.
Yeah.
So, you know, the default user for WordPress is admin.
Yeah.
If you don't choose one. Using defaults for anything can leave you open to certain types of attack.
Yeah.
Realistically speaking, that's not the issue. The issue is if you install WordPress or Joomla or whatever, it doesn't matter, it's CMS of choice, and you never update the damn thing, well, you're asking for trouble.
Yeah, and we've talked about that before without a doubt, and it's probably the most common reason that people get hacked and all of that. But just to finish what I was saying about this this government, actually, you know, I want to move on from that because that's an example of cheap and, well, I won't say cheap, but yeah, effective and fairly simple website design. Have you seen this EU 2013? I know you have, Michele, because I saw you tweet about it during the week. The governments, through a Freedom of Information request, have revealed what they've spent on various elements of communication associated with the Irish presidency of the European Union, which of course begins on January 1st for a 6-month period. And it's quite an extraordinary amount that they've spent on the website EU2013.ie.
That is an understatement. That is an understatement, Colm. I think actually we should give you a special little prize. Understatement of the week goes to Colm.
Thank you very much. It is, in case people haven't heard about this, and I'm going to, I'm just opening it up here.
€244,000.
€244,741.71, according to this. And it stands right out in this Freedom of Information request. It's published on thestory.ie. Contracts awarded by the Department of the Taoiseach. This is in relation to planning and administration of Ireland's presidency of the EU. And it is the single biggest item on this sheet. €244,741. That's a pretty expensive website, Michele.
I can't think of any other way to classify it. I mean,
it's a nice website.
It would want to be.
I must say now, I actually, it was coincidental. I saw you tweet about this yesterday, and then I had actually been engaged with somebody else on Twitter who had linked to the site and given praise to someone who was involved. They work, I think, in the Department of the Taoiseach, and they were involved in the translation of certain aspects of it. It comes up in Irish, French, German, and English, and you switch. It's in four language versions for a start. And I've got to say, the way you switch between them, the quality of the translation, certainly in relation to the Irish, is quite good, I have to say. The overall site, I just thought, was nicely organised, nicely presented, and a beautiful website, but hardly worth €250,000. Or am I missing something? I'm not really, am I?
Well, that's the thing. I mean,
yeah.
You know, this was something that a few of us were discussing on Twitter and on Facebook as well.
Okay, so how would you spend it, Michele? How would you spend €250,000 on a website?
With great difficulty, is the short answer. I mean, what was interesting was to look at the Cyprus presidency of the Council of the European Union website, which is cy2012.eu. And if you actually look at the credits on there, it looks like they actually, you know, they spent very little on it, by contrast. So I don't know. I do wonder. I mean, it's worrying that they would spend that amount of money on a website.
Perhaps, or perhaps you're saying, yes, let's push the boat out for the EU presidency and all of that. But could it be better spent on, I don't know, wining and dining European leaders?
I don't know. I'm quite shocked that they would spend that much money. Now, maybe there is a justification. Let's say there is a justification. I'm just not seeing it. I mean, yeah, looking at this, okay, the total, where is it now? Okay, professional services in relation to presidency 2013, 244,000, yada, yada, yada. Now you look at other items on there. I mean, the flights for presidency event, January 2013, €10,000. Accommodation for presidency meeting, January 2013, €15,000. Communications Advisory Service, whatever the hell that is, 26,000. I'm just rounding up slightly. Training in EU chairing and negotiation skills for approximately 130 officers, 27,000. Yet the website cost 10 times any one of those line items.
Well, we'll have to see.
What the hell? Yeah. I don't know.
We'll have to see. Will it justify its cost down the line? It'll be hard to see how it would, but it is extraordinary without a doubt for a website. Let's move on, Michele. Apple Maps we've talked about before, and the fact that they have been making all kinds of boo-boos since they got rid of Google Maps as the official maps in Apple in iOS devices. And you know, they corrected a lot of those. They were saying, listen, no big deal. We're getting our way around it, and we're learning and we're improving all the time. And Rome wasn't built in a day and all of that as well. But really, it took a serious turn last week when Australian police were forced to issue a warning to people in the area of Mildura, is a city in Australia.
Oh, yeah, And it's one of those things, I mean, like sometimes you see these stories coming out, and you're thinking, oh my God, people are stupid.
Yeah.
But when you actually read that, when you're going, oh my God.
Apple Maps was directing people into...
is directing people literally to the middle of the desert.
The middle of the desert with no water and no mobile phone coverage either.
Yeah. So like you could literally end up... You could, well, let's call a spade a spade. You could end up dead.
Yes.
And because of a software screw-up.
And the local police have had to rescue people. In one case, apparently, at least one case, rescue someone who was stranded for over 24 hours without water or food and had to find their way to someplace where they could get mobile phone coverage and call for help. So that is kind of frightening without a shadow of a doubt. Meanwhile, Google have relaunched their iOS app.
Yeah, thank God.
We're saved.
We're saved. Thank you.
It's okay. Google. We're saved in the desert. Hang on. No, it's okay. I've got an app here. It's all right. Help is on the way.
Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. It's the Google Maps app. I've got it on this phone, obviously.
Yeah.
As soon as it became available, as soon as I found out it was available, I was like, oh God, I've got to get my hands on that.
And you'd been working with the Apple Maps for a while, Michele, hadn't you?
I've been trying to work with the Apple Maps.
Because you were quite sort of prepared to give them the benefit of the doubt at the start and say, you know, teething problems and all of that, they'll get over it. But you've no regrets about moving to Google.
God, no, none whatsoever. I mean, the problem with the Apple one, I mean, just on my iPhone here, looking at it, let's see, hold on. Where the hell's it gone to? Ah, oh, here it is. So let's say I bring it up here. I live across the road from a hotel. It's one of the larger hotels in Carlo. It would be a point of reference for a lot of people in Carlo. It's not on here. I kind of try to move my way around. And none of the major buildings in Carlow Town, with the exception of the railway station, are on this damn thing. So it's like, you know, what the hell am I meant to do with this? Like, I can zoom in closer and I will find a few things, but it's rubbish. I mean, you know, Google Maps, I can actually find things. Mm-hmm. But I'm actually looking here. I've actually zoomed in. Actually, this is insane. The Seven Oaks Hotel, I'll call a spade a spade. Mm. Seven Oaks Hotel would be probably, I don't know, there's like two or three hotels around Carlow Town. It's one of them. It's one which is used for hundreds of weddings and other events throughout the year, and it's not on there. Actually, none of the hotels that I would ever have any reason to go to are on Google Maps. Sorry, Google Maps, on Apple Maps, so I can't actually use the Apple Maps to navigate there. Whereas if I go to Google Maps, look at the same thing, and oh, there you go, Seven Oaks Hotel. I scroll down a little bit, and I'll see other kind of buildings and things that I might actually give a damn about. I can actually navigate my way around the town. As I scan in, it's like, oh, look, here are other things that I might be able to use. Oh, look, there's a museum. Oh, look, there's this. Oh, look, there's that.
It's not just the Maps app, of course, Michele. It's other apps that may want to use mapping data. And it's interesting, not only did Google launch last week their own Maps app for iOS, but they also launched an SDK, a software development kit, for other app developers so that they can use Google Maps instead of the Apple Maps in their applications.
Yeah, and that's welcome. I mean, it's like opening up stuff so that developers can take advantage of things is always a good thing.
And it's given Apple a black eye as well, isn't it?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm a big Apple fan. I really am. I mean, it's upsetting that they managed to screw this up so badly. And I mean, I would love to be able to go into my iPhone. Select the and I can't do it. Mm. I cannot remove that piece of junk that is
the Apple Maps.
The Apple Maps. There is no way to delete it. Mm. All I can do is reposition it. I can move it to a different screen or something like that, but I can't actually delete the damn thing.
Well, we'll see if they subsequent iterations probably. You know, they always say you don't buy version one of an Apple product, and maybe that's the case in relation to this as well. So we'll see how that turns out. Speaking of, here's an opportunity for you to give Google bloody nose now, Michele, if you like. Have you tried or looked at Google Plus communities?
Yes.
Well, what do you think?
I don't know. Maybe it works better in Chrome or something. In Firefox, I've set one up and I've joined a couple. It's something that I think could be very interesting. I'm just not sure. I don't know. I mean, have you used it at all?
No, I haven't. And I'm not even sure what it's about, Michele. Is it like message boards or something?
Sort of. I mean, it's like...
Is it like Facebook pages?
No, not
community
really.
Pages, no?
No, pages... No, the pages are the same as... No, try that again. The Google page... Google Plus has pages for business. Mm. That's... Which is fine.
Yeah.
No, this is more like the groups... in LinkedIn.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, no, it's something I might. I've just logged into it here, and it's suggesting some communities I might be interested in, which have been, I suppose, set up by people I'm in touch with. So there's one there for Limerick Open Coffee Club. There's one for makers, hackers, artists, and engineers. There's one for Twit, This Week in Tech. Podcast series which I listen to. There's one for sexy ladies. I'm not sure who set that up. Obviously someone I'm following, and interesting. All About Ireland is another one that set up. That Bernie Goldback has set that one up, and there's a few more interesting ones as well.
Well, I set up another one, Ireland and Irish.
Okay. Oh, in fact, that shows, and you've invited me to it just now, perhaps.
No, a few days ago.
All right, cool. For the Global Irish. Excellent.
Yeah, I mean. I've got my reasons for that, which I won't explain right now. But I mean, it's one of these things. I mean, I've noticed from looking at a few of the others that they've managed to set up kind of like discussion boards. I just haven't worked out how the hell you do that.
Right.
Like I'm admitting this damn thing and I can't work out how to do it.
It's early days. And you know, I got to say, I still haven't engaged fully with Google Plus in the way that I might. But nothing about Google Plus, Michele, until now, nothing about Google Plus has been in any way what I might describe as offensive or a turnoff as far as I'm concerned. And it's something that I feel... At some point, perhaps when I find the right project or when I find the right way to slot it into my life, it's something that I think I will engage with. Perhaps, you know, Twitter is probably the thing that I'm mostly engaged with now at the moment. But I got to say that's limiting as well. So I think one of these days I'm going to wake up in the morning and go, that's it, Google Plus, for the following reasons or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the problem I have with it is that... it's like there's some fantastic content on there. There's some fantastic, there's some fantastic things going on. Oh my God. Sorry. Just looking at an email from one of our clients, which makes no sense to me. I'm just reading it going, what? Okay.
We'll finish up. I'll let you go back to work, Michele.
But, you know, the thing with Google Plus, let's just, you know.
Yeah.
No, yes. Okay. Sorry.
No, it's okay. No, what do you want to say about Google Plus?
Now, what I wanted to say about Google Plus is, I mean, I'm a bit confused as to why I would use it in some respects, even though I do like a lot of what I see. So I'm a bit conflicted because it's one of these things. It's like I've spoken in its defense in the past, but at the same time, it's not part of my natural flow.
Yeah.
You know, I open up, I fire up my computer, I open up a browser tab with Hootsuite. So I've got Twitter in there. I've got another tab with Facebook. I pop in and out of LinkedIn. I don't know. That varies. I'm not sure how often I pop in and out of there, but I get invites or there might be an update from something. With Google Plus, I don't know. I'm trying to get hard to kind of find a reason why I would pop in and out of it more than once every couple of days.
You know what we need to do? We need to get somebody who's really active on Google Plus and invite them on the show with us. And sell it to us.
So a Google employee, you mean?
Yeah, well...
I'm only joking. Yeah. No, it's one of those things. I mean, look, I know several people who are relatively active on there, and I know several people are relatively active on AppNet. But again, with AppNet, I keep forgetting I have an account. Mm. And, you know, if you were to ask me, will I renew my account next year? And I'm kind of going, at this juncture, no.
No. There's one more thing on our running order for tonight, Michaela. You've posted it in there. I don't know what it is. It's a link to YouTube, something to do with Google Analytics. What's this about?
Yeah, this is something I came across via, I think it was on Flipboard or something. Google Analytics have launched, put out three videos. And it's about Google Analytics in real life. So one of them is Google Analytics in real life, site search. Another one is landing page. And the third one is online checkout. I mean, if you want to, I think in some ways, you know, the online checkout might be one of the best one to look at. But any one of the three, they're very, very clever. Very, very, very clever. And it's all about, you know, seeing where people, how people are using your website, what kind of issues they might have, removing some of those blockers, maybe. It's good. They're good. They're amusing. They're produced in-house as well.
Well, we'll include a link on the website on technology.ie. And we'll post the podcast on the 20th of December, Michele, and cross our fingers for the 21st. I'll see you on the other side.
Okay, talk to you again, Colin.
Thanks a lot. It's long before.